Underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, open daily December 16 through December 24th for the Festival of the Last Minute. Saturday Market offers handmade art, crafts, and other gifts created by artists from the Pacific Northwest and is located at 2 Southwest Ankeny in Waterfront Park. Information at portlandsaturdaymarket.com. Coming up on Bread and Roses, a 2013 interview, Delphine Crescenzo and Leanne Kranz chat with Bread and Roses founder Susan Dobroff. It includes some archived clips from the early Bread and Roses shows. We'll also have a 2010 interview with immigration activists and a 2016 Bread and Roses show, which features Gigi Williams, talking about using film to address sexual violence against women.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs. I'm your host, Kim Crane. The Bread and Roses Collective brings you this show every Friday night at 6 p.m. Women have had this forum on KBOO since 1978. That's 39 years, making it the longest-running feminist radio show in the country. Are you curious what feminism on Portland's airwaves might have sounded like back in 1978? For tonight's show, we are going to be playing a few highlights from the Bread and Roses archives. We'll start with an interview with the program's founder, Susan Dobroff, and we'll air a couple clips from those early days. As I was listening to Bread and Roses episodes from years past, I was amazed at how much is still so relevant. Later in tonight's show, I'm going to share with you a clip that aired in 2010. In that segment, we'll check in with immigration activists who at that time were laying some of the groundwork for a struggle that continues today. And we'll close with powerful words from filmmaker Gigi Williams. Her 2016 interview about the importance of sharing sexual assault stories resonates deeply today amidst the Me Too movement. First up, in May of 2013, Delphine Crescenzo and Leanne Kranz conducted a delightful interview with Bread and Roses founder Susan Dobroff. Here's a clip from that show.
I want to know how Susan, you became involved with KBOO, and then how Bread and Roses got started.
Right. I learned radio from the radio station in New Haven, Connecticut, where I was going to college. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the call letters. It would have been W something, something, something. And we had a program called Sound Sisters, and I think it was a collective. And I we taught each other how to engineer, how to splice tape, and how to put on programs. And that's where I got my love of radio. Actually, I have to go back further, which is that my father was a ham radio operator. Mm-hmm. And from an early age, there was nothing more fun than going into the radio room where my dad was on the air talking to people 3,000 miles away, talking to people in Russia, men, all men. And, you know, I just got the bug of communicating over millions of miles, and how powerful it was, how thrilling it was personally, but how empowering it was also to reach people far away. And so then getting involved with the radio station was just another step on that road. So when I got to Portland, getting involved with KBOO was like, I actually applied for a job at KBOO, didn't get the job, but did make my way into my first group of friends, which were all the staff people at KBOO.
Mm-hmm. And then Bread and Roses, how did that happen?
So Sarah Cook, who was the station manager at KBOO in the 70s, for a year or two anyway, she had a program called Wednesday Afternoon Bouillabaisse, mm-hmm. and it was women's music, news, and public affairs. And she burned out on it. She needed to move on. And back in those days, she said, "Would you like to do the show?" And I said, "Of course." And so I took it over and changed the name to Bread and Roses, because I love that Judy Collins song.
As we go marching, marching in the beauty of the day.
And because it perfectly described my approach, which was that women, that we need economic power, we need bread, but we need art. We need the roses, too. So that's how Bread and Roses got started.
Could you give maybe a little bit of background about Bread and Roses and that movement and what it meant for people who might not be aware?
Right. Well, you know, women's labor history certainly goes way back, and the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire in 1914 is really, and the song Bread and Roses was really important. Now, I don't know what came first, but anyway, all of the, and it's very reminiscent of this, these people dying in Bangladesh just recently. Yeah. It was the garment industry in the Lower East Side of New York City, and it was all women and girls, pretty much. And there was a fire, and there was no good fire suppression or anything, and all these women died. I don't know what the number was, but that was the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, and it was the progressive era, and it's what got started in child labor laws, mm-hmm. and in protective laws for women and men, so that the sweat of their brow didn't kill them, and there were some protections.
So then how did the collective get started?
Well, the show was weekly, and it was 1 hour, but boy, what it takes to start with raw music, news, public affairs, data, and turn it into an hour's worth of programming is, you know, it takes a lot of work, and I was working full time, of course, and politically active, and in a relationship, and I just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So, I think I did it by myself for about a year, but I'm not, you know, if Elsie gets interviewed later on, she may tell you something totally different, and I won't.
Elsie, who was one of the first collective members,
right. And so then I asked for people to, for women to join in, and we each had one show a month. So it was four or five members of the collective, and we each took a week and did our programs.
And we are going to play just a few minutes from a show that was produced in 1978. And so that's a show that was produced the year that Bread and Roses was created. And we are going to go to that clip. Women Working Against Racism is the clip. And this is some women from the Native American community, Chicana community, African American community, talking with Margot Fegery, I think that's the name that...
I thought it was Fegery.
Fegery. Margot Fegery is interviewing these women, and they are talking about racial encounters in the community. Let's go to that clip.
Could we talk about what some of the very clear racist things that go on, you know, like on an everyday basis, because I really feel like a lot people have blinders, and they have blinders because if they don't have the blinders, they lose the powers that they get by having them. They have blinders to acknowledging they have racism, just as, you know, men often have blinders to acknowledging that they're being sexist. Could we just talk about some clear examples and incidents of people like getting defensive, or ways that people back out of admitting, you know, that they are racist?
I think one of the things that I have experienced is in Oregon, it's really tried. They try to hide it in a way. It's hard to say they won't let me sit at this table, or they won't let me come in this store, or they won't let me buy. But I can give you a couple examples. In terms of, for me, as a black woman, there are only a few places in this town where I can go and buy makeup that really works for my skin. They only carry, for example, and I don't know if we're permitted to talk about products. Okay. They carry Fashion Fair as a black product, and Flory Roberts is a product that is used by a lot of black women. I can't buy that at Washington Square. I can't buy that any place with Lloyd Center. Maybe downtown, but they don't carry it at the stores in Washington Square, as if I may not shop at Washington Square. Another thing is that just little innuendo, you know, it's okay to be a part of an organization, but don't try to attain any power or leadership within these organizations. Because then you're out of your place. We need you as a token in this organization, so that we can say we've got some minorities. But once you assume some leadership or try to assume some power, then you're not well received, and you're isolated. And when you walk in a room, the conversation stops. And it's those kinds of things that I've experienced.
You're listening to Bread and Roses, and what we've done is look through the archives that were produced by women back in the days. And so there is this one speech that was actually produced by Elsie, who's one of the early Bread and Roses collective person. This was in 1983. And so she recorded that speech, and then she produced it. And so the speech is by Gloria Martin, from one of the founder of Radical Women. So we're going to go to that archive now. Gloria Martin.
Long ago, Radical Women had many, many discussions with black women at the University of Washington. Many white women almost came to blows. Well, they did come to blows. The Black Student Union told black women to stay away from white men and use physical violence on the black women. That was some years ago, 10, 12. Time slips by. I'm 66, and I forget what year is what. Nevertheless, we had this big dispute, not we, because we decided then and there that we would make it an unwritten rule that white women and radical women would not go with black men. Then we were accused of racism and all kinds of things. But we did that for a reason. We realize and we know damn well that there will be no revolution without black women, without Chicana women, and without Asian American women. And I want to point out to you, we have some comrades in San Francisco, Asian American women. They said, we will be seen and we will be heard, invisible no longer. And that was one of the things about the Asian movement for many years. White people wanted Asian people to be invisible, quiet. They also wanted other minority people to be quiet. And of course, there's racism in the feminist movement. There's sexism, too. We're all taught to be modest and unassuming, you know. And we couldn't possibly lead anything, could we? But we're leaders without knowing it often. Some of the best women leaders I've known were surprised to hear they were. But I want to say this. Ideas can be colorful, but they don't have no color. They're not imported and deported from across the seas like people, in spite of what Reagan says. And you've all heard him lately. And I want to point out that Lenin said a long time ago, and I don't think this was an idea with color, that our fight and our demands and our needs, especially our demands, have to be based on the demands and needs of the most oppressed people. And who are the most oppressed people in capitalist society? Women of color, lesbians of color, workers of color, right? I hope you agree.
You've been listening to clips from the Bread and Roses archives. Delphine Crescenzo and Leanne Kranz actually learned to splice tape, and they lovingly digitized these to preserve some of the fascinating Bread and Roses history. Now, here is Bread and Roses founder Susan Dobroff giving us a glimpse of what it was like to create radio back then.
Well, this might be a good moment to read this poem that I found in my journals. That it's sort of a poem that I wrote in 76 when I was still in New Haven. And I had just learned something about editing. Shall I spend my life picking through the brown, shiny tape, recording, editing, playing with sound, with events? I've spent a day sitting before a tape machine with no plan and little engineering ability. Among the patch cords and reels, I was sharp and careful of combination. Until Stone Tonight, I did something upside down or backwards and swam through the brown stuff till I finally threw it out. The point is, I like it. Watching my fingers clumsy with splice tape, listening to hours of jumble become minutes of intelligible, exciting stuff. The main point is demystifying the machinery, being competent, understanding that maybe I can learn anything and use these tools.
Dude,
that's
great!
Yeah, that was Susan Dobroff, Bread and Roses founder.
So I just want to jump in there because I feel that this is kind of like really harmonizing, like some of the feelings that I have. Like I came to radio really like by, you know, I don't want to say, you know, it was not something that interested me, but I just never knew that I could do these things. I just didn't know. And I used to do a Native show, and it was Sunday morning, and there was nobody there. Right. It was community radio in Bloomington, Indiana. And so I can relate, you know, on that level. But I feel that it's just so empowering, and that's one of my goals in life is to teach. And so Leanne and myself actually are going to young girls who are in facilities where they cannot leave that place. And we are teaching them, like we're bringing field recorders and we're teaching them editing software, and we see the empowerment in them. Mm-hmm. And this is so beautiful because radio has changed me, it's changed her, and we've came together to create this beautiful piece that we make available for young girls who might not have the opportunity to come to the studio. So, you know, I just wanted to say, you know, that I just relate so much on that level as far as it being so empowering and just never having thought that I could do that myself.
That is way cool that you guys do that.
It's a lot of fun.
It is.
And
what about you, Leanne? How'd you get here?
That's it.
You know, I moved to Portland and loved a certain Native show on KABU and got to know the DJ and just started hanging around and never anticipated being on the air. I didn't feel like I could think on my feet in that way. You know, I didn't think I had it in me to be an engineer. I just liked hanging around. But, you know, if you hang around KABU long enough, somebody shoves a mic in front of you and go. So I decided, you know, out of all my political interests, where did I want to focus? And it was definitely women's issues. So I joined Bread and Roses, and I must say it's so much like your original vision. You know, we cover the hardcore political, but also the cultural and artistic, and women's music is huge still. And I, too, was raised by strong women, and, you know, I feel like I've been fighting the fight since I was a child on the playground, and I really, honestly, I think this work is vital for our survival as a species. I know that sounds dramatic, but I think this is about shifting things back into balance and seeing where we end up. So thank you for starting this, and thank you for sustaining it. Give us a place to channel our passions. And
doesn't that just make you want to go and create something? This seems like a great time to mention that the Bread and Roses Collective is open to new members. If, like me, you are new to radio, you'll get training and support to be in front of the mic or behind the scenes. If you're interested, contact KABU's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes. You can also find us on KABU's website, kabu.fm/breadandroses, or find us on Facebook.
I'm hearing how business is tough in America, how the union's out of hand. And I heard on the news today about the latest threat to my pay. That's one thing I just don't understand. They say they can't afford our wages, and they turn their greedy eyes to distant shores. And patrols guard the borderlines, and I'm standing on a picket line while corporate boardroom plans are formed to move my job to Salvador, where for 50 cents a day a woman sweats her life away. And then they tell me she's my enemy.
You are listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland 90.7. That song was Borderlines by Valerie DePriest and Gail Gingrich. Before the break, we were listening to an interview with Bread and Roses founder Susan Dobroff, and we heard some decades-old archived clips. For our show today, we are airing material from our archives to honor our history. Immigration in the U.S. is one of those issues with a long history of activism. This next segment is from a Bread and Roses show that aired in May of 2010. You will hear clips from two interviews about actions folks were taking at that time in an effort to pass the DREAM Act and give young people a path to citizenship. First, a Bread and Roses interview with Pramila Jayapal, the founder and director of One America, an immigrant advocacy organization in Washington State. At the time of the interview, she had just participated in a march in action for immigration reform.
Pramila has been an activist domestically and internationally for two decades. She was the founder and is now the executive director of One America, which was also formerly known as Hate Free Zone. She is an immigrant from India. She has published widely. She has published numerous essays and a memoir called Pilgrimage to India. A woman revisits her homeland. She was involved in an action and in a march yesterday, actually, in Seattle, which we will talk about. Thank you, Pramila, for taking time out of your Friday night. You must be pretty tired from everything that has happened this week.
I am tired, inspired, but tired.
So in case our listeners missed it on the news, tell us a little bit about what happened yesterday in Seattle.
Yeah, well, you know, we've been working on immigration for a long time, and we've done incredible marches in collaboration with people around the country. You know, March 21st in Washington, D.C., we had 250,000 people in Washington, D.C., rallying for immigration reform. April 10th in Seattle, we had 8,000 people. May 1st, we had another 10,000 people in Seattle, and then thousands of people across the state, 500,000 people across the country in immigration marches. But it didn't seem to be catching the ears of President Obama and of Congress. And so we got tired of just marching and rallying, and we decided that in the great tradition of this country and countries around the world, that we needed to do some civil disobedience actions that would shine a light on the moral crisis that we're in the United States with this lack of comprehensive immigration reform, and really push and demand President Obama and Congress to pass immigration reform. So we spent a couple of weeks planning this. We had 40 people who were willing to take arrests, and we occupied the building of in downtown Seattle, the building of the headquarters of where the immigration courts are, as well as the field office for the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. It was a peaceful civil disobedience. We had, all of us were, you know, linked arms, and we sang a number of different songs, "We Shall Not Be Moved," "This Little Light of Mine," and "We Shall Overcome," and a number of other songs, and we blocked the elevators to the building so that people couldn't come out or go in. There were several hundred protesters there, and you know, we thought that the police would come and arrest us because we caused quite a disruption there. But it became clear after about an hour that we were not going to get arrested in the building, that the police was not coming. And so we moved the protest out to the streets. That was a spontaneous decision, but we decided that we would take the protest to the streets, and so we blocked first one intersection and then two intersections and then three intersections. It was really amazing, people singing, chanting, demanding attention to this issue where, you know, tens of millions of families across the United States are living in the shadows, some who are here legally and have applied for their family members to come in legally, and they're still waiting, workers who are being exploited, due process rights that are being violated within the immigration system. So all of those are part of the comprehensive immigration reform that we're demanding. And finally, after several hours, when it became clear again that the police was not going to arrest us, we decided that they were too scared to arrest us, and that we would take this as a huge victory, the incredible momentum that we had there. We would use to regroup for a next action and for an even bigger civil disobedience action, because the reality is that we're not done until we have immigration reform, and we have incredible numbers of leaders in the communities that we work with that are coming out to say this is not the America that we believe in, and we as a country are better than this. So it was a really remarkable day. I think we got our message across loud and clear, and frankly, we're all now free to engage in the next protest without fear of probation charges or anything that would keep us from engaging in another bigger civil disobedience action.
If you're just tuning in now, you are listening to a Bread and Roses interview with Pramila Jayapal from 2010.
It's critical that people understand that for any big policy change that's ever taken place in the country that involves human rights, it has required people to be involved, to participate, and even to sacrifice and take risks that say that we as a people will not tolerate the violation of values that we hold very dear and in making our country a better place.
Thank you so much for Pramila Jayapal from We Are One America in Seattle. And again, the website is www.weareoneamerica.org. And have a good rest of the evening. Thank you so much for coming on the air.
Bye.
I said farewell to Pramila Jayapal from One America in Seattle, Washington. Her and her organization put on a really beautiful action and march yesterday in Seattle, pressing for immigration reform. I want to spend some more time on that issue, but from a slightly different angle, and that is youth, particularly youth who is interested in going to college in the United States, but is very often unable to do so for lack of papers. There, early in the week, there was another, I believe, incredibly brave action in the office of Senator McCain in Tucson, Arizona, and I have on the phone now with me one of the young people who participated in that action. Tanya, are you there? Hello?
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Hello, welcome, Tanya, to KBOO, and thanks for taking time out to speak with us. Tanya is a co-founder of the Chicago Immigrant Justice League. She's an organizer for the U.S. Social Forum. She's a graduate from the University of Illinois in Chicago with a BA in Sociology and a minor in Women's Studies. And Tanya, you and I believe four others sat in Senator McCain's office in Tucson earlier this week and refused to leave. Can you tell me a little bit about that action?
Sure. This was an action that was coordinated independently by us. We are all people in our mid-20s who are either in college or have graduated from college who feel like have a responsibility to the young people that we work with, to ourselves, to our families, to take... To give it our all, basically, in order to see if we can pass the DREAM Act this year. And so what we did is... We were thinking about what sort of action can be something that's owned by our own movement, right? Something that is based on the ideals of freedom of speech, of civil disobedience in the United States, but something that at the same time could be very much our own in terms of being immigrants and undocumented immigrants. So what we did was take a sit-in at Senator McCain's office here in Arizona, and we chose Arizona because we felt like that was... you know, the best place to have that contrast, that dichotomy between the kinds of laws that criminalize undocumented immigrants and that criminalize our lives and the kind of laws that we feel are fair, are just in terms of giving people a chance to be in this country. So yeah, that's kind of what we did. We sat there until we said that we wouldn't leave until Senator McCain co-sponsored the DREAM Act. And so when it didn't happen, four of us were arrested. Three of those people who were arrested were undocumented and are now in deportation proceedings. And I should mention that, I mean, this is something that we've been coordinating not just with ourselves, but with people from our own communities, right? And so as people in our own communities ask us, you know, like, what can we do to support you guys? Our ask is always, you know, the way that we can be saved and the way that other undocumented people can be saved are through passing the DREAM Act.
And can you explain a little bit what the DREAM Act is or is meant to be?
Sure. The DREAM Act is a bill that has been on the table since 2001, which happens to be the year that I graduated from high school. And in 2001, and so the DREAM Act is a bill that would provide a pass to citizenship for undocumented people who came to the United States before the age of 16 and finished 2 years in high school or 2 years in college. And if you know, there's the moral character and all of that stuff. But basically, it would allow us to become citizens eventually.
Or to say it more simplified, it's for young people who spend most of their life in the United States, who are committed to making something of themselves, who have not been in trouble with the law, it would be probably the only avenue for them to become documented and actually go to college and get the education and become productive members of society. Can you say a little bit about the other folks besides yourself who sat in at McCain's office? Like, who were they?
Yeah, definitely. So there were five of us. Elizabeth Mateo, who is an organizer with Dream Team Los Angeles, and she's been here also for a long time. She graduated from Chicano Studies and wants to be a lawyer. Jahaira Carrillo from Kansas Missouri Dream Alliance. She's been working on her bachelor's for 7 years, I believe, and wants to be a teacher and organize communities abroad as well in terms of their education. We had Mohammed Abdullahi, who is an Iranian citizen, and it's been all over the news to, he is also part of the gay community, and if he's deported to Iran, he would face the death penalty in his country. He's been here since he was 3 years old and is organizing with dreamactivist.org, and has also fought a lot of the deportation campaigns of undocumented young people who have been in deportation. And the last person is Raul Alcaraz, who's actually a legal resident of Tucson, who's been doing a lot of organizing around the laws here in Arizona, like SB 1070 and the ban on ethnic studies.
And can you share a little bit about yourself? I understand that you have actually tried to become documented several times, and it's been virtually impossible.
I have, and I mean, when I was 17 years old, I wanted to go to college, and I wanted to have access to scholarships and be able to work. And so I actually went to Mexico and tried to apply for an international student visa, since they told me that that was my only option. I'd been accepted to several colleges as an international student. But when I went, they told me that I wouldn't qualify because I'd been living in the United States undocumented, right? And I didn't know what else to do, because that's all that... you know, it wasn't my choice. I've been here for that long, and I didn't know what else to do. I ended up actually getting what's called a humanitarian parole to come back into the U.S. because my parents were here, because I was young, and because, you know, it seemed like something fair, I think, that Senator Durbin helped me out with. So that was the first time, and actually that humanitarian parole expired, which means that I became once again undocumented at the age of 18. We tried once again around that same time, actually, when my dad was being sponsored by his employer to get a work visa, a green card. Unfortunately, there started to be a lot of work abuses, and so the workers started organizing a union, and because of that involvement, my father's employer decided to stop sponsoring him. So once again, our process got stopped, and after there hasn't been a chance for us to regularize our status.
And I so wish that people could learn the stories and could actually meet people that are affected, that are stuck in this limbo land of not having documentation, especially young people who really, after they graduate from high school, there's no place else to go because they're not eligible for any benefits, they cannot apply for financial aid, in some states they cannot even get a driver's license, so there is no place left to go. But we're talking about people, about human beings, and I think that is sometimes forgotten in the whole equation.
Right, and you know, that's part of the reason why all of us participated in that sit-in, because I in Chicago work with a lot of young people. I do a lot of journalism and actually community radio, and in my second community radio, I train young people to be journalists. And you know, about in a group of about 60 people that I work with regularly, almost every day, about half of them are undocumented. And so I've, you know, also part of that everyday work has been to sit with them and cry with them, right, and talk to them about the limited options that they have and how to like try to cope with the fears of getting deported, the fears of their parents getting deported. And so to me, like, you know, sitting at that office was not so much about me and the stuff that I've had to go through, but about trying to make sure that all of those like stories don't get repeated again.
So, for example, to take the story of Muhammad Abdullahi, who sat in McCain's office with you, he came when he was 3. I believe he probably speaks, if any, very little Farsi.
Right.
He's a young gay man. If he was deported to Iran in the current situation, it's obviously a complete disaster. Whereas if given the opportunity to stay here, he would... could finish his graduate studies and would become a very productive member of society. So I believe even if you're not an immigrant, this issue concerns us all, because what we're doing in the current situation, I think, is push people into criminality, because there are, we don't give them any other options. And then we're, you know, stereotype them on top of it for getting arrested for this, that, or the other.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that someone, a young person here from Arizona recently told me is, you know, like, look at how much we've been able to achieve as undocumented students. Imagine how much more we'd be contributing to the society if we didn't have to go through all those roadblocks.
Hmm. And again, I'm talking from Tanya, talking to Tanya, who is the co-founder of the Chicago Immigrant Justice League, and just with four friends sat in the office of Senator McCain in Arizona to push for the passage of the DREAM Act, which would enable young people a road to documentation if they enrolled in college.
That was an interview from 2010 from the Bread and Roses archives, unfortunately still very relevant at this moment.
Cualquiera de todas depende de cómo tú me apodas, pero no voy a ser la que obedece porque mi cuerpo me pertenece. Yo decido de mi tiempo, cómo quiero y dónde quiero. Independiente yo nací, independiente decidí. Yo no camino detrás de ti, yo camino de la para ti.
Tú no me vas a humillar, tú no me vas a gritar, tú no me vas a someter, tú no me vas a golpear, tú no me vas a denigrar, tú no me vas a obligar, tú no me vas a silenciar. No me vas a callar. No sumisa ni obediente, mujer fuerte, insurgiente, independiente y valiente. Romper la cadena de lo indiferente, no pasiva ni oprimida, mujer linda que das vida.
That last song was Antipatriarca by Anna Tijoux. This is an archive episode of Bread and Roses, and for the last segment, we're going to go all the way back to 2016. Seems like a long time ago now, doesn't it? This is from a Bread and Roses episode produced by Pamela Santos, and this interview was conducted by Cheryl Green.
So this was an interview I did earlier this summer for my podcast, and it was on KBOO with filmmaker Gigi Williams, her daughter, an actress Ashley Nicole Williams, and a counselor Dory Lyon. And Gigi was sexually assaulted as a young person and really continues decades later to face the repercussions, and she did get pregnant from that from that sexual assault. So she made a short film that kind of dramatizes the experience and tries to really bring to light what these consequences, these traumatizing consequences, are, and what it's like to not have the family support and then not, and to be ostracized. And so the film is called Angela's Sacred Heart, and here in this clip we're about to hear is Gigi talking about some of these experiences around making the film.
I decided to want to tell the story so that it could help other people and raise awareness about the traumatizing impact that it can have on you, and long term as well. I don't think enough is being done about this. I don't think enough is being talked about this, and probably because, you know, of the shame and the guilt and all the feelings you have around it and being blamed for it. Like somehow it's your fault and you caused it because you shouldn't have had too much to drink and you shouldn't have been wearing that outfit. And it puts the woman in responsibility, and it takes two people. And the man is also responsible, and that really does get overlooked a lot. And I wanted to share that. Roger Ebert said that movies is a machine that generates empathy. And I think that's what we need in this world. I think that's what we need in this country. We just don't have enough empathy for one another.
It's interesting what you said about the media and empathy. Because we have tons of media addressing this, but we don't have the empathy yet. And I think what's missing is more people with the direct lived experience being in control of which stories are told and how they're told. This topic exists in the movies, but it's not working to help end
it. It's not working. It's not. When I was younger and I was coming up, I couldn't talk to anyone about it. There's a stigma attached to it. You know, I wanted to go to college. I had all these dreams that I wanted to fulfill for myself and my life, and I got totally sidelined by it. And my relatives and my family, my parents, my cousins and aunts and uncles, they totally ostracized me from the rest of the family. I mean, when I look at my life today, I can see that it's been a long journey, and I have accomplished a lot under the circumstances. I think I've done quite well for myself. That's basically the reason why I wanted to do this film, is to be an inspiration, not only for other young women out there to know that they're not alone, and there's help out there available for them. And if I can do it, then they can make it through too, somehow. I think somebody needs to just like be the light keeper, the lighthouse or something, and say, come this way. I got your back. And you're not the only one out there. When we were talking about making the film, we were surprised by the reaction. Mm-hmm. So many people that we talked to said, I'm so glad you're doing this. And it happened to me.
Yes.
Or they knew someone who it had happened to, mm-hmm. their sister, mm-hmm. their mother. It's becoming like a normal thing, just like young men being, you know, profiled by the police. I mean, it should be the exception to the rule, right. not the norm. Right. It takes a lot sometimes, but you know, you have that determined spirit and the willingness to want to grow, the willingness to want to heal, you know, the willingness and the love for yourself that you deserve to heal. That you deserve to live a happy life. You deserve to be loved and respected and honored and treated well. And I believe that when things start coming up consistently, it's a red flag. And it's like, pay attention to this. Watch what's happening. We can't continue like this anymore.
Right.
You know, yeah. That's what happened in Nazi Germany. So many people died until finally people started to pay attention. We just need more people to be courageous and more people to come forward and more people, you know, to support this work. You know, we don't want people to forget, and we don't want them to go back into their complacency again. When the civil rights movement was taking place, it was just such an exciting time because change was in the air, and these people really were committed to that change and passionate about it. And people were flying from all over the world to march with Martin Luther King and people like that when they could see it on television, the news, what was actually happening. And so I think that's where media can have a powerful mm-hmm. impact. Women need to help women. Women need to help women. Yes. Women need to support each yes. other. That's where we're going to get our power from.
That was filmmaker Gigi Williams. And on that note of power, we will close out this episode of Bread and Roses. It's been wonderful sharing with you some of the past voices and history of this collective. As I mentioned earlier, Bread and Roses is looking for new collective members, and you could become part of this history. I will say farewell now with resistance music that was curated for a special International Women's Day program earlier this year.
Yes, I remember the yesterdays, the poverty that you and me survived. For we tried living on streets that weren't giving, and laughed and cried in youth we died and didn't know. Oh yes, my friends, our history, the memory shall carry me until we're free. Hostility, we couldn't see, it was absurd. But we gave joy, each girl and boy, so innocent, our future bent against the wind. Oh yes, my friends,
our history,
the memory shall carry me until we're free. Desperate kisses in alleyways, the future days, they waste our little lives. The concrete park, a stab in the dark, to rest our soul, and we were old before we grew. Oh yes.
our little spot with what they've done. I miss them all, but the future calls, demanding we set ourselves free as we should be. Oh yes, my friends, our history, the memory shall carry me until we're free.
Reach out now.
Did you know that KBOO's daily evening newscast is produced by a team of volunteers right here in our Portland studios? If you've got some extra time and would like to get free training in radio news production, come on down to the studio and get involved. You can learn interviewing, writing, editing, and production skills, all for free, in a fun and supportive environment. Call KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes, at 503-231-8032 to get involved. That number again is 503-231-8032 to volunteer with KBOO Evening News.
Unhappy about the current political regime? Want to do something about it? Something social justice related? And how do you find out about these things? Portland Resistance Calendar lets you know about a lot of these happening in the Portland area for the next week. It's a weekly podcast. It's a blog. It's a calendar. It's a floor cleaner. It's updated on Fridays. Learn more at kboo.fm/resist.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
94.1 KBOO.
What you see here is history. It's history. Never been done.